The following is a Fourth Hand production.
They say I'm disturbed.
From city to city, an incredible hysterical panic spread.
I think we're getting into a weird area here.
Will you tell these fools I'm not crazy?
This hysteria.
You can't handle the truth.
Brain is gone.
This is Hysteria 51. The truth is out there.
It's alive.
But you won't find it here.
They're coming for you. Look, there comes one of them now.
Welcome in, Hysteria Nation, to the podcast that likes the flat earth so much, we're doing another episode on it, Hysteria 51.
I think this is three, technically, if you're keeping track at home, John.
I didn't think you were counting the first one as canon since you weren't a part of it.
You know, I'm giving it to you. You know, even the dog gets a bone. Everyone. Sun shines on a dog's ass some days, I guess I should say.
You're a gracious man. Gracious,
well-endowed, and mighty good-looking.
Broadcasting from the lower fourth dimension, otherwise known as Chicago, I am your humble host, John Goforth. Alongside is the co-captain of this boat to nowhere, Mr. Brent Hand.
Speaking of boats to nowhere, John, when I'm on a boat and I'm looking out over the horizon and I see my eyes went crossed again. Like, I'm still reeling from last week. Just never mind.
I don't even have eyes and you two make mine cross.
That other voice you heard is the robot that makes this show keep trucking along. Well, he more just drinks our booze and tries to kill us. But either way, his name is Conspiracy Bot.
Word.
Well, thanks, Conspiracy Bot. Always a lot to offer. Yeah. All right, Brent, before we waste anybody else's time, let's get right back into the discussion from last week. It is the Flat Earth Roundtable Part 2.
Part 2. Yeah, without further ado, Conspiracy Bot, let's tee him up. Let them dive back in and enjoy? Question mark?
Yeah, question mark.
The Flat Earth Roundtable Debate. Here you go, kids.
When we say that we don't agree with something, that's the nature of science, is trying to debunk whatever the current going facts are, whatever the truth is. You want to try and up that by one to get closer to the truth. So my question would be, with the easterly winds, you know, that we have the jet streams, how does the Earth traveling in that direction cause winds to go in that direction? So when I'm saying that, because that's something we know is testable. So you've already described for me what happens. We see what happens. But a test would be, okay, that happens. So how does that happen on a ball spinning through space? Why is there the easterly jet streams, which are the prevailing jet streams?
Well, once again, you're throwing in the question, but you haven't provided the answer. My question
is that it happens. The answer is that what takes place. So my test, the answer is that's what takes place. That's what is reality. I think we would all agree that the reality is that there's easterly jet streams, which are the prevailing. That's why if I fly to New York, it takes me less time than when I fly this way, because the winds go that way. Mm-hmm. So, but the ball spins that way. So I'm saying that is a testable thing. We can say I just did that test and that the easterly winds do blow east. You tell me we live on a ball spinning east. So I'm just asking, how is that possible?
I have an answer just in general, but before I do that, I want to hear Greg's thought on that, and then Adam and Tack's thought on that.
Okay, sorry. What was the question again? I was having a hard time kind of following that.
Easterly winds and trade winds. How do they travel if the Earth's spinning one way? How do they spin the same way, at like 1,000 miles an hour on the equator?
Simplified version. Coriolis effect, or the Coriolis force.
Coriolis is a result of the spinning ball, right?
Right. It's the fact that the Earth is spinning is what's causing the easterlies and the westerly trade winds and all of that kind of stuff. It's the fact that the Earth is spinning around in a ball a ball.
The wind goes the same direction. So the easterly winds, which can get up to 150, 200 miles per hour, mm-hmm. those go east. But the ball is spinning east. So why would that, could that exist?
What he's saying is the Earth is spinning, and in the same direction, the winds are outrunning the spinning Earth. So on the equator, you know, the Earth is spinning 1,040 miles per hour, but the winds are outrunning the Earth. How does that happen?
Gotcha. Okay, I see what you're – so it's – again, to do the oversimplified version, it's the Coriolis force. But the Coriolis force, basically, if you're looking on a spherical – if you see an object being a sphere and you have it spinning around. The Coriolis force is basically a change in a perceived force direction. So the whole idea is that if you were to throw or shoot a ball or something like that from the equator up to the North Pole and just kind of throw it straight, then from your perspective, you would see the ball kind of shift one way or the other, because as it got closer and closer, it traveled a smaller distance. Based on the fact that the Earth is spinning.
And that is north and south, though. That is north and south. We're talking straight east, the direction that the Earth is spinning. That's not Coriolis.
Isn't the simple answer that gravity reduces as you get higher? So the closer you are to the Earth, the less effect it's going to have on the winds. The higher you get up, it does get crazy.
And the trade winds are only in low atmosphere.
Right, right. So he's talking about the jet stream now, not the trade winds or anything like that.
Well, I'm talking about jet stream.
Okay, that's density. That's just a density problem. It's the fact that up there, you know, the atmosphere is not very dense, and because of that, it can travel a hell of a lot faster than the winds down here.
So one more time, the jet streams travel faster than the Earth spins,
right,
towards the east, and you're saying that that is a result of the spin, but that's what we're saying. It doesn't make sense. Is that it's the equivalent of me answering every question you ask us with atmospheric undulation and just describing things with a phenomenon and then asking you how that works and you saying it works because of atmospheric undulation.
It's because to describe the Coriolis effect, we have to go into, you know, classical mechanics, partial differential equations, and we have to dive deep down the physics rabbit hole, which I don't think we kind of want to do. I could show you guys the equations, but it's not conducive to radio talk.
What he's saying is it's testable and provable based on both the equations and, you know, simply, you know, using we can go there, and so we do have instruments to measure the speed of all of these things.
Correct. That's why I'm using that as my evidence.
How does that play into the Earth being flat?
How does it? Because there's problems with the ball model spinning. Number one being that it's never been tested to spin, never been shown to spin. That's a problem. And that the whole idea of the spinning Earth doesn't meet anybody. Nobody who's ever been on this Earth, 100 billion people.
Hold on. Nobody has. Let's not jump over. You made a statement. How's it never been tested to spin or shown to spin?
It has been tested.
It has been tested and shown to spin. So we don't want to just jump over those bold statements like that.
When has that been done?
Why do you think that it hasn't? Like, I don't know. We have geosynchronous. We have to put things into geosynchronous orbit. Otherwise, Earth is spinning and it moves out of.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to jump in and saying, you say we have to put things in geosynchronous orbit. That's not proof, because we don't have proof that things are in geosynchronous orbit. There's been numerous tests that have been tested to prove that the Earth is spinning, and they've all failed to prove that, and some of them have proved that the Earth is still. Jaron can name all of those tests.
Well, there's Aries failure, which was meant to show our movement. I mean, was meant to show that starlight coming through, you know, that's the one I'm sure you've heard. He filled the telescope with water and said, okay, well, if the Earth is moving, then the starlight coming into the water is going to be slowed down versus the telescope with air. And the reason they call it Aries failure is because it failed to prove that the Earth spins. Michelson-Morley's experiment, Albert Einstein's quoted as saying, I've come to the conclusion that there's no experiment that can show the Earth to move. That's an Einstein quote.
Einstein said a lot of things and then recanted a lot of them. But let's move on beyond that. Adam and Tack, you guys just heard, you know, some of that feedback. Give us your thoughts and questions that you might have based on that.
All right. So let's go on the first part of it. So nobody's brought into effect anything about centripetal motion and centripetal effect that happens with a spherical model as well. So that could affect the trade winds. And I want to kind of clarify something. Not necessarily trade winds, but the jet stream too. The jet stream does not spin faster or does not move faster than the rotation of the Earth. It moves, but it moves with relativity to the surface that it's moving across the planet. So if you've got a jet stream traveling at 200 miles an hour, I know that's a bit fast. However, if you've got that, its motion is relative to the ground, so it's traveling at 200 miles an hour. If the Earth is rotating at 800 miles per hour or whatever the revolution time is, then it's not traveling faster than the 800 mile an hour Earth surface movement at its crust.
Correct, but okay.
I'm just answering some of the... That's
good answer. I mean, the whole thing is what we're saying is that we agree with that, if that's the round ball model that we're taking. Okay. So then you're saying that spin is what causes those winds.
What contributes to it, yes.
Huh?
What contributes to it, yes.
Okay, so the wind that's blowing 200 miles per hour towards the east at the equator, you're saying that the spin that is at a spin zero relative to the Earth is what's causing the 200 miles per hour going towards the east.
What is contributing to it, yes. Not the only cause.
It's not the only cause, but it's a big factor, yeah.
Gotcha.
So what causes what causes the winds on the flat Earth?
Pressure differentials.
Yeah, a combination of pressure and density of the air.
Well, I mean, so give us a little bit more than that.
So
okay, sorry, you go ahead.
Well, if you want to answer that, I just want to kind of keep it on the same subject and of the spinning of the Earth and ask you guys another question how something works.
You can ask, but let's finish the topic we're on.
Go ahead.
I was saying give us a little bit more on what causes that on the flat Earth.
Well, if the sun and moon are orbiting in a clockwise formation, then that would create winds in the easterly direction.
Why would that create winds?
Because they're large winds moving.
The heavens do.
Hmm? Well, I mean, yeah, that's exactly. I mean, the funny thing is you can laugh at that, but then when you say that.
I'm asking what force. You don't believe in gravity. What force is causing.
I do believe in gravity. There's something, like I said, something is pulling us down. Anything with weight drops, right? If a pencil weighs more than air around it, it falls. So, I mean, I guess my question would be, how does
the force of gravity is making those things happen on the flat Earth? Is that what you're saying?
Sure. If you want to call it gravity, is what I'm saying.
Well, we got to call it something.
But the force isn't caused by the mass of a ball. You can call it gravity, but it's not caused by the mass of a ball.
What's it caused by?
We're told that the mass of the ball, everything is attracted to the very center of the ball. But a point Jaron brings up a lot is, what if you were a point halfway between the center and the surface of that ball? How do you know you're not the center? And isn't that pulling everything towards it?
David, I'm no longer trying to disprove that. I'm trying to prove what you're saying. If it's not the center of the ball, but it is gravity, what causes it? I'm just asking you that question.
Any item weighing more than the area that it occupies. So that's why a helium balloon works. So my question would be, how does a helium balloon rise in a ball Earth with gravity as you understand it?
Because it has mass and it weighs more.
Surrounding air. That's all. It's lighter than the surrounding air.
Okay. So you just described my exact definition of gravity. So I thought that gravity was two items with mass pulling together, or that the gravity of the Earth should be pulling the helium balloon down.
It does, but it's the buoyant force that's caused by the density difference is more than the gravity pulling down on the helium. That's why helium just is so rare here on Earth. But
we're in agreement on buoyancy and density and stuff. Mm-hmm. We're just in disagreement on what gravity is. You guys think it's caused by the mass of a ball, and we don't. We can argue all day. But it falls into Earth, works on a ball Earth.
No one's arguing. We're asking for your definition of gravity.
And what causes it?
Well, anything that weighs more than its surrounding area. So dirt and dust and rocks and all that stuff weighs more than air, so it's at the bottom. And water weighs more, so it's at the bottom. And as you work your way up, you get everything that weighs less than that. And then when you get to become air, then there's only a few things that are lighter than air, like helium, like hydrogen. And then you've got the complete Earth set up. Anything that weighs more than the area it occupies goes down. That's because it weighs more than how else could the universe organize itself?
So I got a question for that. What about the flat Earth? Are we falling?
No, because the Earth is all there is. So you'd have to be falling in something.
What's under the flat Earth?
The Earth is all there is. It's
a wall.
It's the equivalent of asking you what's below space. What's under space? You would just say, space is endless. Well, I don't think anything is endless. That's actually impossible. There's no such thing as infinity, because I could just say, what about plus one? So there's no infinity.
Okay. Well,
that is infinity, but
to me, when the Earth ends, space begins, and then that goes on for the rest of the universe. And if there's more universes, that's a whole nother discussion for another day. But in our view of the world, obviously, the Earth ends and then infinite space begins. Are you saying, I guess I'd say
the Earth goes on until it goes on for as far as we know. And so what's beyond that is for another day.
So it's the same answer. So there's Earth for a certain. There's rock and mud and everything else, and then that stops, and you don't know what's beyond that. Is what you're saying?
Correct, because we've only drilled 8 miles is the most any humans ever drilled into the Earth.
Right.
So I'm assuming that
So you believe that the North Pole, as you've said before, is the center, and then the South Pole actually circles us. So do you believe in the ice wall, or I mean, is that something that's tangible? Can we get to it, and we're just not allowed to? Or how do you view that?
Yeah, I mean, there's differing opinion. I can't really say because I've never been there, but I would tell you that there is a wall that, is the ice shelf where water is held in to the kind of, let's call it a lake that the Earth resides in, where all the little continent land masses are. And then there's Antarctica, which certainly seems like it's a frozen tundra, and certainly appears that the further you go away from it, the colder and more impossible it would be to operate any machinery or any plane or any ATV. So if there's something beyond that, which some people think that there is, I've never seen it, so I can't, it would be incorrect of me to say that those things exist.
What do you guys theorize is past that wall? Because that's fascinating to me. That there is something past that.
Jaron said that, we've never been there, so it would just be theorizing, but clearly theorizing, there may be nothing. It may just be the end. It might just be cold, dark, and frozen, and that's impenetrable to humans. Or perhaps there are other thermal pockets out there, maybe 5, 10, 100,000 miles away or even closer. So as you go through that darkness, there's another sun, small local sun, orbiting, making another thermal pocket. And, that's where, if you believe in extraterrestrials, they come from the extra territory beyond the shoreline of Antarctica. If you just Google Antarctic ice wall, you see thousands of pictures of a wall of ice, which is the shoreline of Antarctica. I don't know if it's a wall all the way around. It's certainly not like a wall in Game of Thrones that throws people off. It's right. The shoreline of the ice tundra that we call Antarctica.
And it's back in July, and I can't wait.
Yeah. There you go.
Hey, I got another question for you about the flat earthers. One of the things that have been coming up lately, and I don't know if you guys believe this, is how it falls.
We can barely hear you, but I wanted to just stay on the spinning ball. You said I could ask a question when we're done with that. So and I'll try to make this quick, and you guys can just give me your answer and then let me retort quick. If you're on an airport on the equator and you're spinning 1,040 miles per hour, we'll just call it 1,000 miles per hour, and you're going to fly to the east, the Earth is spinning to the east at 1,000 miles per hour. So when you're on the runway standing still, you are relative to the Earth moving at 0 miles per hour and relative to a point in space moving 1,000 miles per hour. Does everybody agree with that?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. So we get out. We take off in our plane. We're heading east. We accelerate to 500 miles per hour. According to a point in space, we're going 1,500 miles an hour, but land speed is 500 miles per hour. Everybody's on board?
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah.
I feel like this is fishing, but yes, I'm on board.
Yeah. Well, no, I'm not fishing. It's literally, I'm just setting it up so people can visualize because it's things that people don't think of. Sure. So, as you get closer to the North Pole, or we'll go with the North Pole. The closer you are to that, the slower you are going. You're still spinning 365 degrees every 24 hours. But if you're in Alaska, you're only going about 400 miles per hour to make that full circle around the axis of the Earth. Everybody on board?
In relative approximation to a point in space is what you're saying, right?
Correct.
Okay, sure.
Okay, so I'm on a runway in Alaska now, and I'm traveling 400 miles per hour. I take off, I fly down to the equator, and I turn east. I'm now only going 400 miles per hour. How do I catch up to the Earth? With 400 miles per hour, I had my initial speed before I took off. I sped up to 500 miles per hour. Add those together, I'm going 900 miles per hour at best. But when I'm heading east at the equator, how do I catch up to the Earth? It's spinning up 100 miles faster than I'm going if I can maintain all of those speeds.
It's all relative. Every single moment that you move in that aircraft, your object of relativity with the surface of the Earth changes. So you're closer to the equator, your relativity is different than it is at the pole.
Because the entire time you're a slave to the gravity of the Earth.
That's why the Earth gravity is speeding me up as I'm going towards the equator, and then as I pass the equator, it slows me down.
In relativity to a fixed point in space. Yes.
Okay. That's your belief. I have my belief.
I got you there.
It just I'm not saying that I got you. You never sense any of these things. If you're flying in an airplane, you're cruising along for 5-6 hours, it's smooth as can be, you're flying level. As soon as they start nosing down, you know it immediately that you're heading down towards the airport. But at flying at 500 miles per hour, according on a 24,000 mile approximate ball Earth, the plane would have to nose down 2 miles every minute. Otherwise, it would just fly off into space.
You said that you're using the way you feel on an airplane as a gauge. To go back to what you're saying, why don't you feel the fact that you're traveling at 500 miles an hour in your example?
Well, you do. You feel the acceleration when you get up to that speed. You feel it, but you're traveling with it. All the air is moving with you. I'm with you. But any change, if you're flying level, is the air curved also? Is that, how does the plane maintain its level flight path if the Earth is tilting away from us?
The same way water is level at its surface. The exact same way.
All right. So let's just jump over there for a second. Water, you believe water. Yeah, no, you believe water curves. There's a salt flat in there's geographically flat areas of the world. For people that believe we live on a ball, they do agree that there are areas that are geographically flat, like the salt flats in Bolivia. And when it rains, they get covered with water, and it's within like a foot difference. For Jaren, how far is it? 200 miles, 300 miles?
I know that lake is, but the salt flats are like one something.
Okay. 100 some odd miles. And the water, it's not curved. The salt flat doesn't come up out of the water. And over 100 miles, how many feet is that? 100 miles, Jaren? Is it
curvature?
Of curvature on a ball Earth.
I could figure it out quickly, but let me see, 100 miles.
8,000 inches.
6,000 feet.
6,000 feet of curvature.
108 miles provides 3,000 feet of elevation curvature. Aperture.
Okay, we'll go with that if you go on both sides, but sure. There's none. You can see it. On a super clear day with a telescope, you can see way farther across that water, and there is no curvature.
Sure. Can I answer that?
Sure, please.
One of the easiest things about the Bolivian salt flats specifically, I've been there. I worked with the Department of State Bureau for International Narcotics and Law Enforcement, got to go all over Bolivia, Peru, and Colombia. It was a blast. But one of the things you aren't considering in this is the heat that's rising from those salt flats during those storms. You've got an immense amount of heat that's rising from those that is absolutely throwing off a visible spectrum during a look through a telescope. Same way that sometimes that happens on the ocean, same way sometimes that happens looking through the sky using a telescope, you can have things that affect that visual sight that you're getting through your telescope.
Aren't the Bolivian salt flats agreed upon by science that they are geographically flat all the way across, within the variance of a foot?
I'd believe you with your conviction and passion about it, but I don't. I can't say yes to that.
So, again, never believe anything I say. check it that they are geographically flat, and if that was the case, the center would be the lowest part, and the would be the deepest part actually, and the end should pop out of the water, but it doesn't. The water is level all the way across. Curvature has never been measured. Go ahead, Jaron.
An even better one than that is that lake in Russia. I think it's called Bilal or something like that. 395 miles long, and it's frozen between January and May. So if the water curves, as you've said, then there should be 19 miles of curvature present in this lake, and yet the lake freezes and is completely flat. So if that was something, and again, I've never been there, but if I went there and measured that and it showed it to be flat, wouldn't that disprove the ball Earth completely, knowing that a lake freezes over 395 miles and shows no curvature?
Sure. To answer your question, the answer to the question would be yes. However, the important part about this is the diagnosis that you're doing. What scientific method are you using? For example, if I follow some of the videos online about flat Earth theories about planes dipping as they go across the curvature, he's using a level sitting in a seat, about the most unscientific process possible. But I'll give him credit for what he was doing. He was trying to prove that it doesn't dip. Now, not a very good experiment to prove anything. No. So what I ask you, as well as the scientists that studied that to be the geographically most level place on Earth, if that's what it is, what was their science to prove that? And if they prove that, then yes, that's a great hypothesis for what you guys are trying to say with the flat Earth.
Yeah, and that's what becomes difficult is how do we measure those kind of distances, like 395 miles? Because if we use a laser, high-powered laser light, many Ball Earth proponents just say that the laser itself is curving with the curvature of Earth. And so this is what we get all the time, is that if everything happens because of the curvature of Earth, well, then you can never disprove the Ball Earth, which makes it non-scientific because it's not proven, it's not falsifiable. Because you're basically saying that everything on Earth is curved with the curvature of the Earth, therefore anything you measure will show curve.
Let's hop on that for a second. You said it's not falsifiable.
Correct.
Most of the things that we've talked about tonight are from the traditional scientific perspective, peer-reviewed, scholarly, accepted. And you know, the biggest, any scientist, the scientists on this call, I'm sure would agree, the biggest thing that you can do in science is prove something wrong. I mean, that's what you're trying to do. That's the whole point of the scientific method. Okay, it's wrong. Let's try. What's a new hypothesis? Let's try again.
Can I ask a question on that? So what you're saying is that you think that people who review scientific papers, so the peer review group of, let's say, 400 scientists, if I brought them a paper showing the Earth is flat, you actually think that any of those 400 people would allow my paper to be published, which proves their entire careers as frauds? That's what you actually think humans are capable of doing that?
Absolutely. Yes. If you can bring something that is peer review repeatable, then yes, I absolutely think that if a scientist that peer reviews it confirms or doesn't confirm your findings, they would take it objectively. I absolutely believe that.
So there's a guy who submitted a paper showing that he found soft tissue in a dinosaur bone, and he lost his job for submitting that paper. He's a Mark Armitage. He's a teacher at Cal State. So, I mean, that just goes to tell you, you go ahead and try and do that. You think it's about proving something wrong, and you go ahead and try and prove dinosaurs existed within the last 50,000 years, and you're no longer a teacher or a scientist.
Wait, I thought you guys, I thought you guys don't believe in dinosaurs.
Hola, David. Me amo Brent.
Bonjour, Brent. Je m'appelle David.
You didn't do Spanish. I thought if we were going to do this together, we'd do the same language.
Oh, sorry.
that's on brand for us.
I just thought romance languages was the key.
Everything I say is romantic, and that is thanks to Rosetta Stone. You guys, we've been touting these things forever. We love Rosetta Stone, and we actually are users. David, you've really been using it even for longer than I. What's your experience been like?
Oh, it's been great. The thing is, you really get to learn how to speak and think in that language with it, so it's very high on pronunciation, too, so you can, you know, learn how to speak.
And you know our show is all about proper pronunciation.
In that pronunciation, yeah, that's right. But they design it for long-term retention, you know? if you don't get the pronunciation right, you say it until you do, and then, you know, that just seeps into your head.
Well, and that's why, you know, this has been trusted by experts for 30 years, and there's over 25 different languages that you can learn, and people, millions and millions of users use it because, like you said, it does seep in, and you're using it with, you know, you get speech recognition, and mm-hmm. it hears you. You get to use, like, the built-in true accent features that gives you this pronunciation, which is super convenient, and you can do it at your own time. And I don't know if you know this, but I'm all about value, and you get a one-time purchase, 25 languages. If I learned all 25 languages, I'd be so confused or really cool. I'd go in and out.
But you'd be real marketable.
But literally, though, this is something that we use, and we have, both of us have given the seal of approval because we wanted to do this long-term, and it's something that it works. You know, and we don't do long-term stuff like this. And this is the one that we've chosen, and we love it. So all you guys got to do, don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now, as we've told you 1,000 times. And it's always now, right now, get started. For very limited time, Hysteria 51 listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off.
How much?
50%. Visit RosettaStone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your unnatural life.
Wow.
Redeem, redeem, redeem. How do they do it?
Rachete, you're 50% off. Rachete. Redeem it. 50% off. RosettaStone.com/today. Do it today. Nation, we want pictures of your dogs. That's just a personal request from me, but while you look for a good one, let me tell you about something near and dear to my and Brent's hearts, your dog's health. You may have noticed lots of dogs suffering from health issues these days, joints, odors, it's not good. Actress Katherine Heigl noticed these issues too, and after a ton of research, there was one place she found we can look to support any dog's health, their food. So she created Superfood Complete, food for your four-legged friend that's made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Her company, Badlands Ranch, also supports the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Now, I know Brent has used Superfood Complete with his lovable meatballs, and they absolutely love it. He said it's easy to prepare, both his guys grow crazy for it, and he loves knowing what he's giving them is healthy and full of ingredients that are actually beneficial to his little rapscallions. You can try it for yourself by going to BadlandsRanch.com/hysteria and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular priced order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to BadlandsRanch.com/hysteria today.
Hi, well, what do you mean, large reptiles? I believe in large reptiles. I don't think that there's any animals that went extinct 67 million years ago, but I do think that obviously there's animals that grow huge. And before humans were around to hunt them and kill them, then they probably grew quite large.
So, Jeremy, I apologize for putting words in your mouth. I believe that was what David said.
Well, I understand what they're getting at when they say that they don't believe in dinosaurs, but I think they would all agree that large animals existed 10,000, 20,000 years ago.
Right. There's large animals today. I mean, there's whales and all sorts of stuff. You know, animals, reptiles, if we left them alone, alligators get pretty big. And maybe if we left them alone, people would think that they were dinosaurs.
But David, didn't you say that dinosaurs did not exist? Is that accurate?
The dinosaurs, the way they've explained them to us and the time period they explained them to us do not exist.
Okay. So, I mean, we're going down a rabbit hole here, but to understand the archaeological findings that we have, that when we talk about specific, even a Tyrannosaurus Rex or whatever it is, those did not exist.
So I think Jaron has the dates better than I do, but you know, dinosaurs were hypothesized, and then 10 years or a few years later, somebody that was connected to the people who would benefit from that all of a sudden discovered them. And, you know, there's no dinosaur skulls, I believe, that have ever been found. They find a tooth and some crumbled bones. They give it to somebody and say, hey, we think it looked like this. Can you build it? And plaster Paris, and there you go. You got your dinosaur.
I think they found skulls, but no complete skeletons.
Right.
right? If you're looking for actual bones, no, you'll find calcification. That is, you're absolutely right, though. That is a big rabbit hole. Can I ask you guys a similar question to get back to the Earth observations that we were able to conduct scientifically now?
Yes.
I want, and this is an honest question, I just want, you know, your guys' take and what the flat Earth theorists believe with regards to the LIGO studies that have been done and the findings that have been done in the last couple of years and how the gravitational waves that have crossed Earth's path from the theory of two black holes colliding some, you know, 100 trillion light years away, however the hell far away it was, we can now observe those theories in real labs. What's your guys' take on LIGO?
So the
have you... Go ahead, Jaron.
Well, yeah, I mean, you can ask if he's actually seen the data.
Yeah, have you?
No, I have not, if you're talking to me.
Have I seen data?
Well, I mean, here's the thing. I mean, if you look at LIGO, they had to get money for that. They had to get funding for that, right? So sure. Imagine...
Everything else in the world, yes.
Okay, so imagine you get all this funding and you find nothing. Do you think that gives you a good chance of getting funding in the future to do other things? And
to,
it just...
That, to answer your question... That's 100% speculation. That's not an excuse. That's just a speculation.
To answer your question, yes. I think that because if you guys know NASA's successes and failures, like you were saying before, there are thousands of experiments that have cost thousands, millions of dollars or billions of dollars or whatever that have failed. And those results have been reported as failures. But we all learn, the scientific community in general learns from failures. That's the best part about it, is that we've proven something not to be accurate.
So is there any evidence of science ever fudging results in order to meet corporate objectives or... anything you think that's
hold
ever?
On, hold on. That's a very broad answer to a very specific question. You can't take the guilt of somebody somewhere at some time and plaster that across all of science always ever. That's not fair.
Because that goes on.
What you're doing is you're saying that science is always goes through the scientific message. So you're taking quality people.
Now you're putting words in my mouth. I never said that. I simply asked about the scientific method and if that's what you use.
No, I'm talking about in this particular case, you're saying that because these guys went through the scientific method and because their funding comes just like NASA's funding, that they must be doing the correct experiments, that they must be not telling.
It strikes me that when you don't have an answer for something, it goes to who's funding it. When you do have an answer for something, it's no longer about who's funding it, but you think you can disprove it. I've asked numerous times for specific examples of where you have conducted studies, where you have proven something using, because we all agreed at the very beginning that the scientific method would be a valid way of testing something. I've asked Correct. Numerous times, have you, give me an example of something that you've used the scientific method or people that believe the same things that you do of the scientific method that you've used it to prove what you believe. And when we hit certain topics that you don't have a good answer for, it goes back to, well, it's them doing it.
You asked about LIGO. Okay. LIGO is a multi-billion-dollar experiment, right? Was it billions? I think it's over millions.
Certainly over a million. I don't know the exact cost, but yes, safe to say internationally billions. Yes.
Okay. So that project, I mean, if you're asking me as if I have myself proof, physical proof that LIGO isn't true, how would I have that? So if you're asking me that, no. And what I basically
asking your thoughts on it.
Just your perspective. Yeah.
That's so my thoughts. I started to give my thoughts and then somebody interjected and said, that's conjecture.
Blamed it on conspiracy of spending and almost
take them 100 years to the day that Einstein theorized them. They were found. That's not interesting to you.
Coincidental, yes. Interesting, yes, but not conspiratorial. By the way, $620 million was the amount spent so far. $620 million, not billion.
So sorry, I said billion.
September 18th, 2015. No, that's why I had to look it up too. I didn't know it.
Yeah, I didn't know. No, so I mean, if you're asking me, I guess just if you're asking next time for like scientific evidence, I mean, the weird thing is, and this is a position that we get put in all the time, is that many people who follow science think or, you know, agree that science is considered fact. Whatever they have found, whatever the current belief is fact. So we're often put into a place where we're being asked to go up against fact, which is an impossible job. I mean, if you went into a debate with a Christian and they had the right to say that the Bible was fact, then it would be a possible debate, right? You can't defeat them.
That's what we're asking, though. I think what we're asking is we're talking about certain certain what we believe are realities okay. based on scientific method. Okay. So it's been tested.
Gotcha.
There was a hypothesis thrown out and then tested, retested, and then tested by other people in peer review.
Okay.
What I'm asking is, has that same process been done on any of the claims that you make?
Yeah, sure. Like boats being able to be seen after they leave your visual perspective. You know, your eyes see the boat, what appears to go over the water, and anybody who pulls out their P900 can zoom back in and see the boat again. And then if you keep watching the boat, it will eventually mesh in with the horizon. So that the distances that we're able to see boats and buildings and anything is well beyond the ability according to the curvature formula or the line of sight formula for the ball Earth. So when we bring that up, we're told that it's because of refraction, that refraction is lifting the item up over the horizon and showing it to our face. So any evidence that we bring, any proof that we give, well, the deception, I mean, it wouldn't be a very good deception if NASA just, or, you know, the whole scientific entity just said, no, sorry, you guys are right, we're leaving, here's the keys to the, you know, vehicle assembly building. It's not going to happen.
But if you have that boat and you're standing on the shore and you watch that boat leave and you're using optics and you see it, you can no longer see it, it is gone from your view. But if I'm standing at the top of a building that's a few hundred feet above you, I can still see that boat.
Of course, because you're taller, just like I can see further than my, you know, 2-year-old daughter because I'm way taller than her.
But on the flat Earth, why can you see further?
Because on a flat Earth, I can see further than my 2-year-old daughter.
But if it's so flat, it's straight out.
But it's not, it's flat, it's straight out. And
the, it works on a flat Earth the same way. The higher you go, the farther you can see on a flat Earth because things disappear as the angle of that they go into your eye. So if you're 6 feet tall, you're looking at something on the floor 6 feet in front of you, you can see it clearly because it's at a 45 degree angle. But as you move that thing farther and farther away, and on a flat Earth, the horizon rises up towards your eye level, that gets down to such an angle that once it hits, I think it's 0.2 degrees, you cannot see it anymore. It just, it vanishes from your view. And that's true on a flat Earth. If you raise your height to 20 feet, 50 feet, 100 feet, you've now increased the angle to that thing in the distance and you can see it again.
So, Greg,
so you can see farther on a flat Earth.
Greg, do you have an opinion on that?
Well, my question was it's parallel to this and it'll hook back in a second, but what exactly is the horizon then? What is that line that cuts off from the sky and the ground? Like, what is that cutoff?
So if you were to put yourself in the bedroom that you're in right now or whatever, and let's picture that room as an 8-foot ceiling, but it is as big as your city. Okay. So the room that you're in is actually huge, 5 miles far distant from you. If you looked off into the distance, the ceiling of that room will meet the floor. That is the horizon. It's not an actual horizon. There's no horizon there, but that is the distance that you can see. And if we had a light on the ceiling above us and it raced across the room after 2 miles or so, it's going to dip below that horizon line and slowly that light will go away. If you're going to be in a dark part of the room, but on the other end of the room, 5 miles away, it would be lit up.
Converging. Okay. And converging lines. Yes. Agreed.
Right. So converging lines. Okay. Then it comes to me that, let's say the horizon keeps going, right? It's all about converging lines. Then having the height difference, right? So if I'm on the ground and I'm looking out and I see my ceiling, my hypothetical ceiling, go off into the distance and it stops at the horizon. If I raise myself up to the top of the ceiling, it's not going to make any difference because they still converge at infinity. That's the whole point to parallel lines, is that they converge at infinity. So at as far away as possible as anything ever. So that's the whole point of converging lines. So in my height difference.
But you said it converges at infinity, but you can put yourself in imagine a 50-mile tunnel. And if you look down to the end of it, it doesn't converge at infinity. It converges at about 3 or 4 miles away from you. So that's where the ceiling meets the floor. Go ahead.
But what about, let's say, you know, we do what David's saying and get a telescope and I can see the end of the tunnel. So if it's the converging lines, though, they do meet at infinity. That's the whole point to converging line, is that they from our naked eye, sure. You know,
they meet at infinity, but we can't see past 3 miles or whatever the short distance is.
That's my question. Why not?
Because it's the way our eyes work. We can only see when something gets down to an angle of, less than a half of a percent, we can't see it.
But what I was saying is if you're on the shoreline and you have optics, you can have a more powerful optic than the guy at the top of the building and not see it. But the guy at the top of the building can still see the ship.
Well, how do you know that? I mean, you can. And it also, it's not just, you can't just see forever, because when down on the surface of the earth, the air is the thickest, there's moisture, there's pollution, there's all sorts of stuff. And all of that adds up and becomes opaque over distance.
And things of any size get smaller as they go away from you. So,
right.
You know, Bill Nye right. said, you know, why can't we see Spain from the east coast of the United States, which is a ridiculous statement, because we know a car driving away from us in 200 yards becomes imperceptible. So across the ocean, Spain would be the size of a pinhead.
So what you're saying is then if we had the right optics, if we had the right piece of machinery, the right telescope, that we could.
No, we're not saying that at all, because you can't see through atmosphere, even on a clear day, after a relatively short distance. It just becomes completely opaque. That's okay. What the sky is. It's just the opaqueness. If you watch a series of mountains, if you go, if you see a series of mountain peaks, even on a clear day, each mountain peak in the distance gets lighter and lighter and lighter until it's mm-hmm. just sky. And then there's still a mountain there. You just can't see it because it's blocked by opaque air, which I'll just call sky.
Okay, so that's where I was kind of going with this. That's my parallel. This is where it meets. So geometrically speaking, so if you imagine a right triangle, right? So I'm kind of going off of where we're going into Euclidean geometry here. So let's say we went in and did that experiment where we have somebody on, you know, the beach, and they're looking out at the sun, and the sun is doing its setting thing on the horizon. And then we have somebody else on a 300-foot cliff, and they can see the same thing. But what you're saying is that things disappear because they get sufficiently far away that the atmosphere itself is kind of blocking its picture to us. It's blocking its image. And so my argument against that would be that the person, if it's all the same distance away from anybody, like the same lateral distance from the person that's up here, they're looking through more atmosphere than you are on the ground, because it's a hypotenuse of a right triangle. No, and the hypotenuse is longer than the base of that triangle. So they are looking through more atmosphere. So wouldn't they see it go before you did?
No, the most atmosphere is at the ground level. So anybody on a 300-foot cliff is looking through less atmosphere.
But no, because if it's a triangle, they're looking further. I mean, it's
you're talking about, think of the difference in the length of those triangles. The hypotenuse is going to be just a semi-tiny bit longer, but the atmosphere is
clear. They're actually looking further, and they're looking through more atmosphere.
The higher you go, the clearer the atmosphere is what Jaron is saying.
Yeah. Okay, so have you guys ever done this experiment before, where you go off to a beach and you look and you kind of get down on your belly and you watch the sunset, and then you jump up immediately onto your feet and you can see the sun go for about another second after that?
Sure.
Oh, the green flash.
The green flash is pretty cool, but that's the whole refraction thing. But
right.
what I'm saying is that you can actually see the sun. You can see the sun, like the actual crest of the sun, for a tiny bit longer if you just immediately step up and at your, 6 foot tall. So between 0 and 6 feet, it can't
works
be that
on a
much
ball
different.
Earth works on a flat earth. It's the same thing on a ball earth if we could live on a ball, and on a flat earth it works the same way. As far as height, you can see farther.
I mean, if you had somebody, let's say, who's laying down on a basketball gymnasium floor, right? That gymnasium floor is flat, but somebody standing up 6 foot tall can see further than that person and more of the item. So if you had a basketball, let's just say, that was all the way at the end of two or three gymnasiums, the person laying down might have that basketball kind of obscured by the ground that's in front of them, but the person 6 foot tall would be able to see more of that basketball three courts away on the ground.
All right, guys, we're getting close to the end here. Another question for you. This goes back to space now. It's my understanding, well, you obviously don't believe this because you don't believe that we've been to the moon, but it's my understanding that we have reflectors on the moon that we can shoot a laser at and then test the distance from the Earth to the moon. Well, first, Greg, is that accurate? Am I saying that correctly?
Yeah, it was left by the Apollo astronauts.
Okay. So we can shoot a laser at the moon and say, this is the distance. When we do that, David and Jaren, how are we being, I suppose you would say that we're being manipulated or lied to. How is that number coming back differently?
Well, 1962 lunar ranging experiment was the first successful test of a laser being shot off the moon to determine the distance. So clearly it has nothing to do with Apollo at all, and yet is always brought up as some sort of proof. But look up lunar laser ranging experiment, and it happened in 1962, 7 years before they went there. So clearly, the fact that we can shoot lasers off the moon has nothing to do with anybody.
That wasn't my question. My question had nothing to do with who set it there. My question simply means we're able to test the distance.
You didn't hear what Jaren said. They're telling you that they're able to test the distance by bouncing a laser off the moon, but only NASA can do it. And then you sit there and you listen, and all of a sudden you hear, you know, they shoot 50 trillion photons, and then two of them come back, two, and you hear ping, and that they're telling you that is how they determine the distance. But Jaren's telling you that they did it. They also claimed that that's how they knew how far the moon was. They bounced a laser off of it without a reflector on the moon. So right there, that's deception. They're lying, and none of that is real.
So
none of
saying,
it.
You're saying the science behind it is incorrect.
I'm saying that you can bounce a laser off of a reflector. That's easy. But they lied to us. They said that they did it without a laser, without a reflector. And then they said, oh, they put a reflector there, and that's how we've been to the moon.
To distill your point, you're saying that if we shoot a laser at one of those reflectors right now and we get a distance, you're saying that the distance that is that the machine tells us that is reflected to us is incorrect. Is that
correct?
Accurate?
That's a machine that's telling you, number one. Number two, they say they shoot over a few quadrillion.
A calculator's a machine, too. I mean, because it's a machine doesn't mean it's wrong.
Nope, I agree with you. But when they shoot over a quadrillion photons at the moon's reflector that's been placed there for that exact reason, they get back one or two photons. So yet they were able to determine the distance to the moon to get there by shooting the laser off the moon with no return apparatus. So how did they get that? How did they know the distance they were going?
Adam, do you have any thoughts on that?
I don't know the particular experiment that you're referring to before the laser went up there, but what I would like, or before the mirror went up and was placed on the moon, but what I would like to know is what were the details in, sounds like you're typing, what were the details involved with the size of the laser and the type of laser? Because my understanding is that mirror will allow for less massive beams of light to have a detectable reflection that comes back because of that mirror. So my understanding is that it's considerably less powerful lasers that are needed.
It says it reflected off the moon's surface using a laser with a millisecond pulse length. That was 1962.
Do we know do you have this spec? I mean, I know that.
Yeah, I think we're both on Wikipedia right now.
what I'm saying is that powerful of a laser that was used originally before the mirror was up there, is it that much more powerful? Because if it is,
In 1962, you think that they had a laser more powerful than the one that they shoot now with the multi-quadrillion photons?
Well, they would have to. That's the thing is that they put the lasers up there, or not the lasers, they put the mirrors up there. One, because it's easier. It's a lot more, you can know it precisely where those mirrors are. And from that, you'd be able to determine more precisely how far away the moon is. But at the same time, you don't have to have a super mega powerful laser taking up so much energy that has to reflect back off the moon back to us.
Why is it that NASA always, figures out how to do something and then gets rid of that more powerful thing? Like, we don't have the technology to go to the moon anymore because we've lost all of that. All the telemetry is gone. Who told me that?
Yeah, of course, NASA and every other space agency that's out there has the knowledge of how to get to the moon. The problem comes to budgeting.
Right. It's the money.
Well, the astronaut, what's his name? He's been up there for years and years and years. I can't remember his name right now. I can't think of his name. Anyway, he says that we can't get back to the moon because we lost the technology. and it's too expensive to get it back. That's basically what he said.
There's actually moon missions that are planned in the future as well.
So, guys, Brent, you had another question.
Well, I just had one question because it's been in the news lately, and it's kind of an out there one, and I wanted to ask what you guys are talking about, because you did bring up mountains. They've talked about mega flora and fauna, about, like, plateaus, and mountains aren't actually rock, but some flat earthers were saying they were giant trees from the past that have petrified. Do you fall into that camp, or do you have any thoughts on that?
No, not me particularly. I mean, I thought it was an interesting video. I think I'm open to listening to everybody's ideas and speculation, and then I just kind of weigh that with my own experience. So for me, I don't have enough research behind whether or not mountains or trees. It certainly appears to me that there are some mountains that are far beyond the size that I would ever imagine any tree trunk being. But I've also seen some buttes in Utah and other places, at the Devil's Peak, that certainly appear to be or look like what tree stumps look like. And when you look at their, I can't remember if they're octagons, but the columns that make them up, that they tell us are from lava. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me. What makes more sense is that and if you get a tree and look at a tree close, it has the same octagonal columns. So, I mean, I'm not a believer in that because I haven't done the research in it, but it's an interesting video. David?
All right, Jaren, I think...
Same thing.
Right on. Jaren, I think that's a good place to hit, kind of our coast home here. You said, I don't have a ton of research on that, but I believe... I want to hit this idea one more time. A lot of the things that we've talked about tonight are peer-reviewed, okay? So these are things... When I say peer-reviewed, I mean simply that there are different groups of scientists across the country throughout ages that have tested these things and have come back with the same results. Thus, they fit into the scientific method. Okay. So they have been proven, to the scientific community in general. My question is, and I'd love to hear your feedback and what have, a lot of the times when we say things, you say it doesn't make sense to me. That's anecdotal. Anecdotal can't be used in proving things. Whether you believe in the flat earth or the round earth, anecdotal can't be used to prove things. What tests have been done in your community that prove some of the things that you have said?
After years of fine print contracts and getting ripped off by overpriced wireless providers, if we've learned anything, it's that there's always a catch. So when Brent and I heard that for a limited time, all Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan, we thought, man, what's the catch? But after talking to them, it all made sense. There isn't one. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online. They cut out the cost of retail stores and pass those sweet savings directly to you. Brent is trying a plan right now and says that it works like a charm from Chicago to Nashville as he makes his big old move. Mint Mobile is working for him. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. And you can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts. So ditch the overpriced wireless with Mint Mobile's limited time deal and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month. To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/hysteria. That's mintmobile, mintmobile.com/hysteria, hysteria. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/hysteria. $45 upfront payment required. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
Mostly things that people can do locally, like laser tests across bodies of water. I'd say that's number one. A lot of people just observing distances far greater than they're supposed to. There's a mountain in France that they've been, it's been spotted. It's like the distance record, 160 miles. It's an 8,000-foot mountain seen from a 1,000-foot observation point two times a year. That's the peak is called Canigou, and it's from Alloche, France. That completely, it should be, you know, over 2 miles below the horizon, yet we're told that. So, I mean, this gets back to that point is what I'm saying is that, yeah, science will tell me that that's refraction, that somehow that's being lifted up. They tell me that the sun, when I see the bottom of the sun hit the horizon, that it's actually below the horizon, but it's being lifted up. But that is something that can be scientifically disproven because you can watch the sun go all the way through its motion around the Earth and it never has to jump to catch up anywhere. So how did it? How is it jumping up to above the horizon? When is it catching up to its regular orbit? It never does that.
So
it just
what it sounds like you're saying is there haven't been a ton of tests to prove what you're saying, but what the other people are saying to you doesn't pass the smell test. Is that
correct?
Is that
and accurate? If it was,
yeah,
it's so accurate. Right. And I wish that I had the funding NASA had, or I wish I had the. I mean, if somebody. I mean, $52 million a day, and we don't have a 24-hour view of the Earth from the space station, which
yeah,
has been
Adam attack, quit being dicks, and kick us some of that cash.
I think everyone could probably chime in there. It's not like NASA's got a ton of funding right now.
Well, let's get something very clear.
You know,
funding
$50 million a day.
You ask for what scientific proofs we've done, and there's lots of proofs that the Earth is a ball, but we've scientifically shown that those don't work. You know, hey, the boat goes over the horizon. Well, no, it didn't. We just zoomed in, and it's back. You know,
well, zooming in with your Coolpix doesn't prove anything.
Proof that the Earth is a ball. Aristophanes proved it by the sun at noon, you know, making a shadow on no shadow on one stick and a shadow and the other or well, or whatever used it. And, you know, Carl Sagan drilled into our heads that that can only be done on a curve. Therefore, the Earth
David,
is a ball.
With due respect, there's been one or two tests since Aristophanes.
But hang on. The ball Earth in science, in school, everyone is taught that test proves that the Earth is a ball, and it doesn't, because it also works on a flat Earth with a close local sun. If you get two posts on a desk, put a light above one of them has a shadow, one of them doesn't.
Well,
so
you can't use a light on a desk to represent the sun and something.
Why not? But, a light directly above it.
The proportions are completely incorrect.
That's not true.
The light source is completely different. I mean, I'm not even a scientist, and I know that. But
I'm saying the light from the sun is local and close to the Earth. It is actually a valid test on the flat Earth model if you understand it.
But it's not. How can it be local and close to the Earth if let's assume the Earth is flat, right? So let's assume the Earth is flat, and if you've got New York, it's midnight over in Germany or something like that. It's like 8 a.m. or something. So. It's light over there, but not over New York. But if they're all on the same flat plane, it would be light everywhere. But if you're saying that if it's directional,
not true. You're making a mistake there. Yeah.
If it's directional, you should still be able to see it.
No. Nope.
Not true.
It's close, and it goes past the point of convergence for several reasons.
But
how
do you have proof that it's close? What tests have been done to prove that the sun is that close?
Because you could look at, if you look at perpuscular rays, other people will say that that's an illusion, but you can see that the sun, there's so many things. Seasons prove that the Earth is close because they don't make any sense on a ball.
Do you believe the speed of light?
Yes, they do. Yeah, I can explain this perfectly fine.
But do you believe the speed of light?
Is the sun closer to me during my summer or my winter? I'm in the north.
Actually, yes. So for the Northern Hemisphere, this is actually pretty cool. But for the Northern Hemisphere, you're actually closer to the sun during the winter than you are during the summer. It's because the Earth is tilted at 23.5 degrees.
So you're saying that angle that the sun is hitting the Earth, because when it hits at an angle, the same amount of light is spread over a bigger area. Therefore, it heats a less heating, correct?
It's spread. It's not so much spread over a bigger area, but it's spread over a different area. Yes.
Right. So it's coming in at an angle. So on December 21st at noon, when the sun is at its highest point in the sky, at noon on December 21st, on the highest point in the sky that day,
Okay, gotcha.
For December 21st. You can go out at noon. Anybody can do this experiment and stare at the sun with your face and feel the heat on your face. Well, you can barely feel it. You can feel it a little bit, but you can barely feel it. But on June 21st, when the sun rises, the second it comes up over that horizon, when it's at its most severe angle, I mean, it's skimming across the earth, you can feel the sun blasting on your face. So that disproves the spreading of the light, because we're going from – we're not talking 23 degrees, you know, a slight little difference. We're talking a massive difference.
Well, David, David, I think that we'd all feel better about the discussion if the conjecture was less what you can feel on your face and what you can see with a camera and more –
well,
more testable things than.
Well, here's the thing. You want to use calculations and everything.
I do. Math is the universal constant.
You know what? You are giving senses. Every sense in your body tells you that we are flat, stationary, not moving, and the sun is close. Only nonsense tells you otherwise.
Or common sense.
So your sensory perception of yourself is what's proving science.
And science has taught us to ignore our senses and believe the lies of men.
No,
there's a video called The Arctic versus Antarctic by Eric Dubay. Watch that and ask yourself, how is seasons possible like this on a flat earth? It's a short video, Arctic versus Antarctic by Eric Dubay.
Let's go with the thought experiments that you've been going with. If I stuck my hand in a warm bucket of water and then I threw it into a cold bucket of water, my senses would tell me it is burning up. I can't trust my senses at that point.
Your senses there, though.
Yeah. And it's called the Arctic and Antarctic Prove Flat Earth.
I wasn't talking about the video. I was just giving you mentioned you trust your senses. I'm saying that our senses can't always be trusted in that they are relational to our environment. Isn't that accurate? Right.
Just like my senses say that you can't, you know, as you said, you can't see the boat anymore. And then you pull out your camera and you still can see it. Your senses are lying to you there.
That's your senses doing exactly what they're supposed to do. You've lost the ability to see that distance, and then you've used a device to aid your senses.
But what are my senses telling me when I throw that hand that was in the cold bucket into the warm bucket, and it says it's hot?
Well, because it's not you. You go through life in normal circumstances. You never have your hand in freezing cold water and then throw it in hot water. So you've completely thrown your senses off kilter by setting up an experiment to prove a point, which it did. That's not your senses, because your senses don't ever sense you with a hand in that water.
Yeah, so that doesn't feel right, right? Because I'm using this wild experiment to give anecdotal evidence.
So
that's my whole point. You're using this wild experiment. Let me finish. You're using this wild experiment to give this anecdotal evidence,
what experiment?
I'm sorry.
Which one? So you said, so when did we set up our senses to fail us? You know, David was saying that during the summer, when the sun rises, that the heat that you feel on your face is hotter than if you look at the noonday sun in December. You did not do anything to trick your senses there. That's not a wild experiment.
You don't have to use your senses. You can get a bowl, a parabolic bowl, face it at the sun, put a thermometer in there, a scientific thermometer, one that says science on it, and do the same thing at solar noon on December 21st and sunrise on June 21st, and you will see that it is way hotter, way faster on June 21st. And that's because the sun is local and its heat
but
is
that's
local.
Not, and he explained to you why, and you just said no.
No, what do you mean? He explained to me why. He explained to me that the reason it's winter is because the sun is hitting the earth at an angle. Well, guess what? On June 21st at sunrise, you can't get any more of an angle where the sun, you know, that sunlight is spread from horizon across the earth. It's tangent to the earth. It's not shooting down at earth. At noon on December 21st, it's even hotter. It's the angle of the sun.
And yet we're told the rays of the sun come in parallel.
Greg, I'd love to give you the last word on this part of the conversation.
Oh, okay. Well, the only thing I can really think of is I'm going to go back on David's experiment, though. If you take a thermometer and do your parabolic dish and everything like that, I mean, you still coming in from personal experience. I smoke, and so I'm not allowed to smoke in my house, so I got to go outside for that. in the wintertime, you know, I'll go out and I'll have a cigarette and I'll come back in. My hands are freezing cold. So I'll go in and I'll put them under some just barely lukewarm water, and it feels like it's burning. So that's kind of going back onto that idea that, you know, you can trick your senses. And
so
use
a thermometer. Forget I've done it with my face, okay, but I know what the temperature is. Use the thermometer and you'll say.
So here's the thing, though, is that the thermometer doesn't just read radiant energy from the sun. The thermometer also reads air temperature. So if you were to do this experiment, you would probably want to put it into a vacuum. And so with that vacuum part, then yeah, you'd probably end up with exactly the same temperature from the sun as you would in the winter as you would in the summer. Taking out all other variables and only having the sun. So you take out the air, you take out air pressure, you take out air temperature, leaving only the sun. I've never done the experiment, so I can't tell you, but you know, logic would tell me that the sun's the only thing affecting that thermometer. So yeah, the sun's going to have the same temperature.
All right. Well, gentlemen, we've hit a lot of the flat earth tonight. I feel like this conversation could go on for another 4 hours and we could
and not scratch any more.
And not scratch the surface. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Hey, thanks to all of you for being civil on this.
It's been a great conversation. David and Jaron, I understand that you have some, we are a conspiracy theory, mystery, unexplained show. So, with the final few minutes, are there other, conspiracy theories out there that you believe in, that you have thoughts on, that like, hit us with a quick bullet point list of things that we need to be aware of.
And while you're at that too, tell us about your website and the things that you do.
Yes.
Okay, me first. I'll go real quick. Am I muted? I don't even know.
No,
okay.
No, you're good.
Thank you. You can go to Jaronism.com, or Jaronism is the YouTube channel. I also do a podcast on Monday nights on truthfrequencyradio.com from 6 to 9 p.m. Pacific. So that's where you can find me, and we're always just talking about conspiracies and ways to improve the world. That ultimately, if science was doing things that – and I mean science – not the physical science that people can actually touch and do, because that is great. It's the most, you know, wonderful thing on the earth. But the science that's theoretical, when you've got NASA flying around Jupiter, which is a ball of gas in space, and we're spending money on that, I've got a big problem with that, because I think that when we've finished our work here on the earth of making sure everyone's got food and water and shelter and everyone's kind to each other, then we can go ahead and do whatever we want out in La La Land. But to be taking money from people forcibly to show them what I think is CGI images. They don't have any pictures of the earth that should be. It's 2017, and they've got composite images due to satellites orbiting and strips, and they just don't have a picture. They don't have a camera on the moon, a webcam on the moon taking a 24/7 view of the earth. The ISS, which is in orbit of the earth, doesn't have a camera 24/7 on the earth. It's 2017. They get $53 million a day. And I ask you, what has NASA or space travel done for humanity? And anything that you get, you just need to ask yourself after that, well, could that have been done without space travel? And the answer every single time will be absolutely. There's nothing that NASA has done besides build up America's prestige by faking moon landings. As far as other conspiracies, yeah, I'm open to all of them. And I think it's the best way we should look at those is look at the mainstream media. Get your information from them and then go and look for alternative sources. And sometimes you're going to find that when you look at those, they're kind of a mess and that they're not making a lot of sense. And the mainstream story might make more sense, but that's very rare, because what you're going to find most of the time is that the researchers doing what the media should be doing, which is actual investigations and thorough research and looking into things completely. Those are the people telling the truth. And now we've got a media completely controlled. So anything that happens in this world now goes through a filter before it hits your eyes. And that filter is lying to you. You're watching TV that is corporate funded, corporate owned. And of course, everything that we see, everything we hear is backed by some nefarious agency. So I'm open to all conspiracies, because they certainly seem like, the more I research them, that and I've seen some that don't, you know, weigh out. Some people were saying that recent flight that killed that soccer team down south, Chapecoense, Heard a lot of people saying that that was fake, and I, you know, did my research on it and said no, that was a real plane flight that really crashed because the owner of the plane tried to make it without the right amount of gas. So either, there's real things that happen. Obviously, the world isn't just all fake, but
right.
You have to look at every single thing because most of it is done to fool you in some way to keep you under their control and to steal from you any way that they can. That's just the nature of people. People in power want to stay in power. So that's all I got.
David?
My YouTube channel is DITRH. It stands for Deep Inside the Rabbit Hole. I have most of my videos are under 5 minutes, most of them. And they get you thinking. They'll maybe entice you to go listen to a longer video. Jaronism's YouTube channel is also a great place to learn about the fraud of the space agencies. Sorry, Adam and Tack. Adam, okay. I would love to see from you if you can get your boys up in space to film themselves actually leaving for a spacewalk from the inside through the outside without cutting the film. And when they're outside, do a 360-degree view. Even inside, that would be wonderful. Live, of course, that would be great. And Tack, every time you guys land one of your SpaceX bottoms on the drone barge out in the ocean where nobody can see it, the video cuts out because of, I guess, bad Wi-Fi out there. I would assume that that there is a recording of it actually landing without it being edited. We would love to see that. Also, back to you, Adam. The space station, it's amazing. And the guys that built it, I'm sure they probably videoed it in Six Ways to Sunday so Mission Control could see it being built. To date, we have never seen any video of the ISS being built. So I've labeled it the IFS, it's the International Fake Station.
call it the ISS.
The ISS. And then the last thing is, you know, if anyone believes anything Jaron and I have said without checking in anything, you're as dumb as you are for believing the lies that the indoctrination system that they call the education system has taught you. Take these thoughts and have the courage to go look a great place. If you don't know, you know, should I go to DITRH? Should I go to Jaronism? Should I go here? There's a channel called ODD Reality, and he has ODD Reality 24/7 live feed. And what that is, he takes all of the best and the newest flat earth stuff and streams it 24/7. So have that playing in the background while you're making your breakfast, while you're, you know, turn off the TV for a week. And I guarantee you, anybody that takes the time to really look will drop the ball. You know, nobody likes having their ball taken away. You have to really go in and be willing to give it away.
And David, before we stop your portion, are there any other conspiracy theories that you want to expound upon or think that people need to be woke to?
You know, there's a website. Jaron, what's the name of that website that has all the conspiracies on it?
Stop, Look, Listen, I think.
Stop, Look, Think, or Listen? Think. Yeah, stoplookthink.com. It has a lot of flat earth stuff on there, and there's everything else from the Boston bombing to the London fire.
The Boston bombing, meaning it was fake?
There's so fake, it's not even a discussion I'm willing to have anymore. Go watch the videos there. The evidence, not just YouTube videos. People say, oh, where'd you get that on YouTube? I defy them to find anything that's not on YouTube. YouTube is like the world. It's like people. There's truth and there's lies all over it. You have to decipher and look for yourself. But the Boston hoaxathon was a complete and total joke. And there's 10,000 pieces of proof. One being, I'll just give you one out of 10,000. The bomb blew up, and right next to it was a Nike banner that didn't have a single hole in it on a fence. Right next to the bomb, not a scratch.
That's another rabbit hole we're going down there.
Yeah. So, but it's all on stoplookthink.com.
Great.
And by the way, if you go to that website, bring food and water.
Greg.
I agree that that site's a great place to start. And if you believe anything I say or believe anything in any of my videos, then I do, you know, feel sorry for you, because we should be moving away from hearing people say things and believing them. They can give us thoughts and they can give us ideas, and then we go out and test them. You know, if I ask my mom if she believes in Sandy Hook, that it happened the way we're told, she would say yes. And I don't have a problem with that if the person has done the research on the other side. The problem is my mom has not done the research and won't do it. She refuses to watch anything but the mainstream media. Right. So I do have a problem with those people. But if you actually go and do the research and you can say, I watched these 10 videos and I still believe the mainstream story, then you know what? I don't have a problem with that. The problem is I've never met somebody who said that, because anybody who reviews the evidence will see exactly what's going on in this world, that people are willing to lie to your face and take your money and take your guns. And as long as you sit there and do nothing, well, they'll continue it.
And Tack, I would like to invite you on to Monday Night Raw with Jaren to talk about SpaceX. If you want to come on, we'll treat you with respect. And we'd really like to hear about what you do there and have some questions for you.
And speaking of that, let's hit Adam and Tack. Let them talk a little bit more and say goodbye.
First of all, I want to say to you guys that are coming on to the show with the Flat Earth theory perspective, I applaud you. The two of you are two of the more intelligent debaters that I've ever had the honor to listen to.
Some people call us the master debaters.
But I do appreciate it. I want to applaud you and thank you for sharing your perspectives. While I don't necessarily hold all of your perspectives or many, similarly, I do applaud you for coming on and going against the grain, because the majority of the world thinks differently, and you guys come out and speak very well and educated, and I'm impressed.
One person I forgot to ask. One person said that there is a proof that the Earth is spinning. I'd love someone to send that to me when they find it.
Okay, I'll have to get your contact information from the guys from Hysteria 51 after this, because I definitely will. Real quick, to answer a couple of the last-minute questions that came up, not to debate them, but just to give my perspective on them. First thing is the NASA budget. It was cited several times as how much money NASA gets, and that we should have more proof than that. While I agree there should be enough proof to conclusively tell you or to show to you what I believe, I agree with that, that should be there, and it's not, or not necessarily in your opinion. NASA's budget is minuscule in comparison to other things that are more relevant in the times. So, for example, just going to give you one thing. And this is from a personal hero of mine, which is Mr. Neil deGrasse Tyson. I'm stealing a little bit of his quotes in the past for this statement. If you took every NASA budget, every annual NASA budget, and added it together since 1961 or whenever the first NASA budget came out, I don't remember exactly when that was, you would not even come close to touching the amount of money that was given to the bank bailouts back in whatever year it was, 2009, 10, whatever year that was. So just use that as a reference. NASA's budget can always be improved. Mm-hmm. In fact, both candidates in this last presidential election had great theories on what they could do positively for NASA. So I'm happy on either candidate got in for a NASA perspective.
So something that we didn't touch on is the hoax that is money. Money is just a control method. NASA does not get $52 million a day. They just steal $52 million from the American public. And the bank bailout is the same thing. That's on the back of the American people. It's just a control method. The elite that are doing all of this don't need money, because they can just type numbers, ones and zeros, into computers and create debt for us. And that's how it works. So
while I respect your opinion, I didn't talk over some of your stuff in your closing. Now, come on.
My bad. Sorry.
That's all right. But some of the jokes aside, and on serious topics, of course, that both of us hold pretty serious in our personal lives. Again, thank you guys for coming on. I encourage any of you guys, and I have been begging and looking for a flat earther to also come on one of our podcasts as well. And maybe even host one of our other shows. I mentioned it at the beginning of this show. We host a show called The Twisted 10. The Twisted 10 is a unique top 10 list each week that either one of us as a regular host on that show or a guest host comes on and literally takes over the show for an hour. Some of your guys' theories on some of these conspiracies. Now, Brent and these guys did one on conspiracies too, but more specifically on the flat earth. I would like to invite you guys right here on Hysteria 51 to come host an episode, and you'll be treated with respect as well.
You guys would be fantastic. That is the perfect format for you.
Yeah, agreed. And we don't necessarily debate your perspective of your top 10 list. We just ask, we work with you during the show to both make it entertaining, because it is a comedy show, but we also want to pull the information out of you. So I would be honored if you guys would even consider that, because I absolutely am fascinated with your guys' perspectives, and you're very well spoken on what you're saying.
Absolutely.
I don't know about Jaron, but I'd be very interested, and keeping it funny is easy when you're talking about the ball earth theory.
I'm totally in. Yeah, definitely would love to.
Cool.
Yeah, we'll definitely shoot you guys the invite. We would be honored for that. But again, my name's Adam. I'm one of the hosts of those shows. There are four of us, and we have a 5-person team. We've got a web and admin guy as well. His name's Josh. But thank you guys for having me on, and Tack as well. Tack will get to his stuff in just a second. But thank you very much for having us on. While we are not, you know, high-end doctorate scientists that are out there, we do have a different unique perspective because we do work in the space agency. And I can go on record and say I haven't signed any part of any conspiracy to cover money or to, you know, hide photos or anything from the public. So from my perspective, as much as you'll believe me for saying it, I have never signed anything. And I've worked DOD, DOS, and NASA since 2001. I have never signed any of those.
No non-disclosure?
Non-disclosures, but more for a corporate entity like intellectual property. Now, there are things at a certain government clearance level that I have had to sign that I wouldn't release. But from my perspective and what I do, none of that had anything to do with theories or cover-ups or anything that I've ever had an interaction with. Now, mind you, I don't deal with photos in space. I'm an IT guy at heart, so most of what I do is the support infrastructure for those systems. So just from my perspective, I will tell you that I've never signed any or have any knowledge of any kind of conspiracy or cover-up. I'll go on record saying that anywhere you would like me guys to do that. But I'm Adam, and thank you again, by the way, guys. I really appreciate your perspectives. You were 3-2 tonight, and you guys did awesome.
Tack.
Okay, so I didn't get a chance to talk much. I had to kind of be more aggressive, I guess. But I definitely enjoyed listening. So I work at SpaceX. I'm a security officer. I'm not an engineer or anything. I'm just a security officer. However, we are still involved with day-to-day operations. So there are people that I've seen videos and stuff, people claiming that SpaceX is phony and SpaceX is CGI, and with the takeoffs and the landings. You know, you said we landed on the barge, well, we also landed on our landing pad as well. So, and if you think it's not real or CGI, whatever, I invite you 100%. You can come right down here and visually watch it come right down and land.
Tack and I often get passes to bring visitors with us out to approximately the vehicle assembly building out at the base. So we could, you would have to ride with us in our car. So you'd have to trust us. We'd have to, we give you our credentials, but we would be out there.
You can actually go to a David Copperfield exposition where he'll actually make the Statue of Liberty disappear. I don't know if you've ever been there and seen that, but that can be done in person too.
Yeah, but you can't make up those sonic booms when that vehicle lands back on the pad at Kennedy Space Center. That can't be made up.
Planes can't fly overhead and create sonic booms? It's interesting. I thought that. Like,
are you claiming that it's an airplane crashing into the ground every time that we land the first aid?
A plane can fly overhead and create a sonic boom, right?
Oh, well, yeah, but why when you can literally watch the first stage come back down? Wouldn't that just create...
Where
from
can you...
3 miles away?
I'm sorry?
From 3 miles away, how close can we get to a SpaceX rocket landing?
Oh, you can... Very close. You can see it. You are literally watching. It's not a question of what it... It's not a tiny light in the distance. You visually see the rocket come down.
Right, and there's... I mean, you can go to a magic show and watch a car literally disappear. So, I mean, what I'm saying is
That doesn't make any sense. I'm saying you can come down.
I've never been to a magic show and seen that.
Right. So you can come down here evidence. And just watch it. I'm not going to perform a huge magic show. I promise. I don't have that kind of money.
You can be fooled into believing that you saw a rocket land 3 miles away.
But you can be fooled into believing that you didn't see.
If you came with us.
Yeah. You can be fooled into not believing.
We'd love to come. So we're in.
Okay.
Hey, well, we gotta wrap up.
I like to fly first class, though.
We gotta wrap up. Greg, I believe you're a podcast virgin. Is that not right?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah,
You kind of jumped in feet first, so thank you on that.
Well, I like talking. I mean, I've been thinking about making my own podcast. Everyone here has something, like they got a YouTube or a podcast or something like that. I did have a YouTube and it was going pretty good until I got into high school teaching, and that took up literally all of my time. So I,
bastards
I
haven't of tomorrow. Just, you can't trust them.
Yeah, it's too much time. And yeah. So, I mean, I thought about doing something this summer, but then I just enjoyed not working. So
Greg, since you don't have anything to plug, why don't you wrap us up here with your final thoughts?
My final thoughts about this whole thing is when taking into account everything all at once, it's you know, talking about all the observational evidence that's been collected over, you know, the past 4 or 5 centuries. It's actually even more than 1,000 in the past couple of millennia. It all comes down to the simplest explanation, at least in my eyes, and I can't say this about Jaren or David, but it's in my eyes, at least, it's the simplest explanation is that the Earth is a ball. It's a sphere or spheroid, I should say, because it's not exactly a sphere, but it's spheroid, that orbits the sun, which is also a sphere. And that's pretty much as simple as it could possibly get, it fits every single explanation, and it matches with things that, you know, it matches the math, it matches all the observations that humans have made, and it's super simple. And it doesn't have to take into account, you know, it doesn't have to take into account all the stipulations and all of the rules. It's just one simple rule that the Earth is round, it spins, and it orbits the sun. That's it. So that's pretty much about it.
Well,
that's all I got.
On that note, we appreciate it. Gentlemen, we all appreciate you joining us tonight. I don't know if we cranked anyone's brain one way or the other.
Hey, I learned stuff. I learned stuff from the flat earth side. I learned stuff from the globe side. I had a blast because everyone here knew their shit. And I was so enthralled with that. And I was afraid it might degrade into arguing and stuff. And everyone here was classy. You were respectful to one another. And I couldn't ask for a better round table.
Yeah, guys, all of you, we appreciate it. We think you all did a great job, and we hope you will come back to the show at another time, and we'll continue this discussion. Well, there you have it. That is our second treatment of the Flat Earth.
I don't know if we've helped you or hindered you in any way of making up your mind, but there you have both sides of the story from experts. I use that term loosely, but that's probably just referring to John and I, so you're welcome for muddying your mind even further.
We still want to know what you think, Hysteria Nation. Hit up Hysteria Nation on Facebook. Just hop on Facebook and search for Hysteria Nation. Tell us right now what you think. Where are Brent and I wrong? Where is Tack and Adam wrong? Where are the Flat Earthers right? We don't know. Let us know.
You can also find us on Facebook.com/Hysteria51Pod. Also, while you're at that Hysteria51 Pod, hop on Twitter at Hysteria51 Pod. We love to hear about you on there. And don't forget, you can also reach us with our voicemail, 773-669-7277. And while we're talking about reaching people, how can they reach some of the people we had on the show tonight?
That's a great question. There were two podcasts represented on the show tonight, both from Adam and Tack. One is the Twisted 10. You might have heard Hysteria 51 on that show. You can find them at the Twisted 10 on Twitter. You can also find their other show, Living Podcariously, at Podcarious. That's at PODCARIOUS.
Now, the big important thing for everyone, they're thinking, where can I get a Hysteria 51 t-shirt? Well, you're in luck. Go to teepublic.com/stores/Hysteria-51. Or you can just go onto teepublic.com and search Hysteria 51. You're going to find all your Hysteria 51 swag. T-shirts, stickers, I don't know, hoodies for the kids.
All of your Hysteria 51 needs, up to and including Conspiracy Bot.
And if you can't remember any of these things, you can always go to hysteria51.com, find all of that there. And don't forget to tell a friend, because that's what's most important. Tell them about the Flat Earth. Tell them about the Globe Earth. Tell them that you love me. Tell them that you love John. Tell them that you hate Conspiracy Bot.
Easy there, ass clown.
So with that said, I've been Brent.
I've been John.
He's been Conspiracy Bot.
Stay woke, meat sex. Thanks for listening to Hysteria 51, a weekly oddcast of conspiracy theories, mysteries, and the unexplained. We'll be back again next week with more known unknowns. If you'd like us to discuss a particular topic, suggest a guest, or simply seek some truth, we'd love to hear from you. You can email the show at hysteria51podcast@yahoo.com and follow us on Twitter at hysteria51pod.
You've been listening to a Fourth Hand Joint.